Hello, this is Bill Barton from Bellwether Hard Cider and Wine Cellars, located in the Finger Lakes of New York State, USA, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 199. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week on episode 199, which is an incredible number to say, we are featuring Bill Barton of Bellwether Hard Cider and Wine Cellars. This is a Finger Lakes cidery, one of the originals out there in the Ithaca, Tompkins County region. And as such, he has been in business for quite a while. We're going to be getting to Bill's conversation coming straight up, but first, a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. Greetings to the new folks just tuning into this Cider podcast. Now is the time to subscribe. There is just a wealth of episodes to listen to, and many more coming up your way. Cider Chat has been online since the fall of 2015. It's finishing its fourth year. We are now going into season five once episode 200 goes live. And episode 200, which I am gearing up for, will be live in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, and you can get involved. And when I'm asking listeners, whether new or regular listeners and subscribers to this here podcast, to do is to have some fun, because cider equals fun. And it's pretty simple and kind of kooky, and I think, why not? Because that's the way I approach cider making. Why not? Let me try that. And so I'm going to encourage you to take a little time to sing a little bit of the ditty, "We Like Cider." Now, I brought you into this here episode with the background music, and that is the We Like Cider song. And at the very end of this episode, you will hear the full song sung. And throughout the episode, you're going to hear little clips here and there, little short clips like chorus lines. And you could choose to sing any part of that and to add your own verse in. So it could be like, "We like cider, ba-da-da-da. We like palms, boo-doo-doo-doo. We like biscuits and gravy and having fun." Add whatever you want or sing it as it is. It's all good because it's cider and cider is fun. And if you send that little audio clip, and I'm hoping that you could do that easily, and I do it all the time on my smartphone. If you look at your smartphone while you're listening to me now or when you get a moment, there should be an app somewhere where you could do a little bit of recording. And that's all you need to do. You could send it even as a message, a little text message, and you could record an audio there. And then just send it to me. Send it to my email, Rhea@ciderchat.com. And that's spelled R-I-A, Rhea, my first name, or I should say nickname, because my full name is actually Alexandria. I have a long name. So be it. Anyways, send that to me, and I am going to be collecting whatever comes in and posting that on the 200th episode, which really is a banner for Cider Chat. And I hope you get a sense, like I do, that it's not just about Cider Chat, it's about the world of cider and the fact that there is so much going on to sustain a weekly podcast all on cider. And it's not just the same material over and over again, which I'd get bored if it was that. So we're not going to do that. In fact, last week we had Gregory Peck from Cornell University. He is a pomologist and has a program there helping future people become pomologists. And we talked about his research, and it was super informative. The week before was also from the Finger Lakes, and that was at the Goat Barn. And it was also in the region there. They had beautiful waterfalls. So we were at a waterfall and just talking about, if you're cruising through that area, what to do. So, cider is just bigger than making it. It's the history of it. And that's a bit about this week's podcast here. But before I get into this week's podcast, I just, again, that reminder, the 200th episode is coming up. There'll be no episode next week as I'm planning it. And I need some time to get prepared for that because it's a marker for me. It's a huge marker. And I got a couple of things up to my sleeve and I need some time. So why not, right? So again, take some time, sing the song We Like Cider, any part of it, even if it's a ba-da-da-dum, boom, 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 ba-da-da-dum. If you get your friends all around just doing ba-da-da-dum, I'll be able to use that as a transition piece. And how much fun would that be? You know, keep it easy, keep it fun, and keep on drinking cider. All right, when I come back, I got a little wee bit of news, and then we'll be rolling into our main featured chat. Alrighty, this is mainly a public service announcement for anyone coming into Franklin County Cider Days this coming weekend. If you're listening to this 5 weeks from now or 2 weeks from now, it's kind of past due. But let's say you are coming in and you want to make cider, you could still get containers to load up on some nice unpasteurized cider-specific blends when you come to this area. Pine Hill Orchards in Coleraine is doing a bulk pressing specific for cider makers, and they have very good rates there. But you could go to any of the orchards that make cider and grab their jugs. Just know that most of them will be pasteurized. And if you want to have just like fresh pressed apple juice, you got to go to Pine Hill. Now, if you're coming in this area, you need to think about the vessel you're going to have. So whether it's going to be a plastic food quality 5 gallon bucket or some type of glass carboy, and some people even bring barrels. Remember, if you bring a barrel, you might not know this if you're a novice, but that sucker's going to be really heavy and you're either going to have to like siphon it over into another smaller vessel or borrow somebody's pump or buy one because you just can't pick up a barrel unless it's maybe, I don't know, like a three gallon barrel. So that's just something to think about too. And the other piece there is you're going to need an airlock that allows the cider as it's fermenting to release CO2 out of the vessel, the container it's fermenting in, without allowing oxygen to come back in. So you need to get an airlock. So that's two things, a vessel, an airlock. And then the third thing you want to think about is yeast. You could go wild. I do, because, that's who I am. No, I just love, I like wild yeast. I like to see what happens. But I also use cultured yeast too. In fact, I recently went to the store that I'm going to recommend and I just got some sweet mead yeast. And it's a liquid yeast. It cost me under $10. It was like $9.95 or something like that. Because I always like to make a cider, which is honey added to the juice and fermented with the sweet mead yeast. So it's called the sizer. I got some sweet mead yeast. I have that already. And I thought, well, let me find out what else the store has, because this store is located in Northampton, and this could be a stop on your way to Franklin County. And it's not too far from Franklin County either. From Greenfield, it's like a half hour drive south on Interstate 91. It's right off the highway. The store is called Beerology, and pretty informative people there, Mike and Jordana, a husband and wife team. They open up the shop. They're doing education and they have the following yeast. So I'm going to just go down the list with you. They have the classic Saf Cider yeast. It's comes in a green package. It's a dry yeast. And that'll kind of give you like a basic cider. That's cool. So you could try that one. They also have yeast number 71B. That is a classic one. A lot of people use it. In fact, I got turned on to 71B way back from Terry Maloney at West County Cider. So I have used that in the past, not so much anymore. Last year, I used this yeast, D47, so they have some packages of that, and that's not my cider that I made last year. I did a batonnage with that. They also have E1118, also K116, it's probably KV116, And then they have the basic like Red Star lineup and some liquid yeast, such as that Sweet Mead liquid yeast. So that's a good spot to get it. Another place you could get yeast at is Pine Hill, where they're pressing and selling the bulk juice. But the thing there is they won't have as an expansive collection of yeast. And then it gets kind of like really difficult to find yeast, and you don't want to be left out in the cold with your cider saying, "Why aren't you taking care of me?" So do think about that. Think about getting that ready. I know it might be down to the wire, but if you are listening and on your way up to Cider Days right now, say you're flying into Bradley Field Airport and you're going to go home and be all charged up to make cider, that's a place that you could stop. They are on the line at Beerology, and nice people there. Okay, that is my public service announcement right now. And the only other thing I want to say about folks coming into Franklin County Cider Days is it looks like a nice weekend. Looks like it's going to be sunny out, so that's good. But no, it is changeable. Or as Mark Twain says, if you don't like the weather in New England, oh, wait a minute.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
That is my cousin Jay and myself actually singing that song. So kudos to Jay for putting some music to it. And now, Ciderville, we're going to go to the main feature chat with Bill Barton of Bellwether Hard Cider and Wine Cellars. They make both there, both cider and wine. And I was, you know, I didn't really know Bill. I couldn't find too much on the website, and I didn't really quite know what to expect. I drove up there that day with Kendall Blizzard, who works for Visit Ithaca. In fact, it was Visit Ithaca who got this whole Finger Lakes tour for me, get geared up and underway. And it was a rainy day when we pulled into the cidery. And so you're going to actually hear a little bit of background noise. It won't be like pitter-patter of rain, but just know that we're underneath this overhang out on, they have this beautiful porch area with all this wisteria and stuff. And we're sitting out at a table, and it was kind of a cloudy September day with the rain, and just having a conversation. And when I first met him, I could tell he was a little tentative and probably didn't know anything about who I was, because that's what's happened sometimes. I have found with makers who have been in the cider sphere for a long time is you get really focused inward, and also you get a little tired. I think we both kind of surprised ourselves, because actually Bill and I have both been in the cider sphere for the same amount of time, more or less. And I know what it's like to kind of be pushing uphill. In fact, even if you're new to cider, you probably feel like you're always pushing uphill, and it's a drain. It's a brain drain. It's a financial drain. It could be an emotional drain. And so these moments like this are really, they're super special to me, because as the conversation grew and you kind of suss each other out, it opens up too. And that's my experience here with Bill Barton, in that I had the opportunity to speak to somebody who had been in cider for so long. He started that cidery in 1997, and there weren't too many people on the map in the U.S. at that point. And it was a pretty lonely road. And when you've been pushing for that long, and now you see so many people coming in who don't necessarily have a history of cider, that could be kind of overwhelming too. So it's such a fine, fine pleasure for me to present to you this conversation with Bill Barton at the tasting room at Bellwether on the west side of Cayuga Lake in the area of Tompkins County. So let's grab that glass and join this chat with Bill Barton, a Bellwether Hard Cider and Wine Cellars in the Finger Lakes region of New York.
We started in 1996. So we were, I guess, one of the first in New York State and one of the first in the country doing it.
And how did you get into cider making?
I started making cider as a hobby. I was brewing beer And a couple people were doing it as, again, part of their beer making hobby, and it appealed to me. And I had, my wife and I had not too long prior to this been traveling in Europe and got introduced to cider in France. And we had really been wondering why there wasn't more cider in the U.S., being completely ignorant of the history of cider in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really intrigued by it, and in some ways there was less equipment and less cleaning than making beer, so it appealed to me on that regard as a home cider maker.
Mm-hmm. When you became commercial in 96, but you were making cider up to that point, right?
Yes.
So when you went commercial, what kind of press did you have? Do you still have the same press? Are you using
that now? I'm not pressing apples.
Okay.
At all. I'm getting somebody else to press
from the
for
juice.
Me.
Yeah. So where are you getting your juice from?
Variety of sources.
In New York State? Is it New York State?
Yeah, or? I mean, we're operating under a New York State farm winery license, so all of our fruit has to be New York State.
Has to be, without a doubt. Okay. Yeah. Are the varieties that you're pulling in, the juice, are you working with the blend? Can you tell me a little bit about that relationship? Because you've been doing it for a while, so you must have a certain particularity around what you want to be putting
in
the bottle.
Well, I mean, I'm a little less adamant that there should be a distinction between cider apples and other apples.
Between culinary and more like bittersweet and bitter sharp.
Yeah, I really find that distinction misleading and not very helpful in terms of deciding what can make good cider and what can't. I mean, I can make cider out of any apple. The question is, can I make good cider out of it?
Well, let's get then the definition of good cider.
Well, that's going to be in the eye of the beholder.
Or the mouth.
The mouth of the beholder.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I don't want to dictate to anybody else what is good cider, but, I mean, I have my own preference.
What's your preference? So are you on the sweet side? How do you look at it?
I tend to drink drier ciders. My preference in terms of the balance is more of the high-acid North American heirloom varieties. And I guess in a simple-minded way, I consider good cider, whether it's sweet or dry, if it's got a good balance to it. And I look at wine the same way. So maybe that's not very sophisticated, but for me, it seems to work.
Well, I think you kind of hit it on the head, saying it's balanced, you know. And for me, I don't know if you'd agree, but when I look at a cider, that's probably the first thing I look at is how did that all meld together. So when I'm drinking it, I'm not being taken only like one direction. It's like a full mouthfeel. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, when I say balance, I'm looking at three components: acid, tannin, and sugar.
Well, I want to get a little bit of the image of your commercial enterprise back in 96. That is a while ago. I hate to admit it, but that is a while ago.
Yeah.
What is this, the same building?
What would I see
back then?
I actually started in an old chicken hatchery that's closer to Ithaca, New York.
Chicken hatchery.
Yeah.
So, like, were there chickens in there? Or it was like an old, like, you repurposed it?
It was repurposed.
Those are pretty cool buildings. I mean, they're like a shed. If I'm correct, a shed roof kind of scene.
Well, it wasn't quite that rudimentary, but it was. It's an old building. It's still there. It's had a couple other lives since I was in it, but was a very big space with not overly tall ceilings. I had 12-foot tanks in there, and they just fit. In fact, I would open the top manway, and it would catch against the ceiling, which was kind of convenient. It held it open.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a big, big space.
Yeah.
With floor drains, which was nice.
Very helpful. And what kind of containers were you fermenting in?
Stainless steel.
Stainless steel. So you started off with stainless steel.
Yeah.
Wow. And were those like the variable tanks, you know?
No. I had two 1,500-gallon tanks.
Milk tanks?
No.
They were built.
I had them built.
Okay.
I literally went from 5-gallon batch to 1,500 gallons.
Jeez, wow. You were jumping like head first.
No, I said a few prayers that first batch.
I'm sure you did. And at that point, were you bringing in juice? Were you always bringing in juice?
Yeah.
Always bringing in juice. So you always had that relationship. Stainless steel, you're still using those tanks?
I still have them.
You still have them?
Yeah.
Have you expanded since that time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And back in that time, has your yeast changed?
Yeah, I think at the time it was fairly typical to be using some champagne yeasts.
You're right about that.
And that's pretty much where I started.
Mm-hmm.
I played around a lot with yeast in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Did a bunch of experiments. I used a variety of wine and champagne yeast, and also beer yeasts, particularly ale mm-hmm. yeasts.
Okay, yeah, I've used them myself. They're kind of fun. Do you still do that?
I still periodically will do experiments, but you know, quite frankly, I've come to the conclusion that yeast is not a particularly important component.
Is there an important component?
Well, I mean, obviously fruit. Fruit is the main event.
So, well, what role does yeast play then, other than just turning, you know, the sugars into alcohol?
Well, I think that, honestly, is the major thing that they're doing. And I'm not saying that there's no difference in flavor profile, mm-hmm. but I haven't tried a yeast where I said, wow, this is just night and day different from anything else.
Do you do any wild, like, you know, ambient yeast?
Yeah, and I mean, we do, all of our wines are done with ambient yeast. So that's a big part of our program. Although I like to point out to people that ambient yeasts in a winery is a little misleading. I mean, I've got 20 plus years worth of yeast in this building.
So sure do.
It's a little bit less risky to say we're doing ambient yeast here than if I were doing it at my house.
Yeah, you have a house cidery yeast here.
Yeah.
It's already here. Is that, if folks were here, coming here, would they have a good chance of having one of those? Well, you're saying wine. Are you calling it wine because it's at a certain?
No, we're making grape wines.
You're
as
making
well.
Grape wine. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily doing that with the apples.
No, I will occasionally do something like that.
But not too often commercially can you find it. It's gonna be hit or miss if we come here.
Right.
Look for it. Okay.
Right.
So, I mean, I haven't ever really heard that, you know, that yeast doesn't play an important role. I kind of always thought it really kind of really imparts quite a bit of the, where it's going to be taking those apples there. It could be really, cultured yeast is pretty, it's like, I don't know, getting hit by a baseball, like pops you, you know, especially for the apples. But how did you come to that conclusion around yeast?
Just by doing a bunch of tests and saying, man, I just can't tell significant differences.
So you said that your preference is a dry cider. So are you doing any chapelization where you're like fermenting? And for the listeners who don't know what that means where you'd be putting in sugar at the time of fermentation. Are you doing that? Do you add much sugar to your cider?
I try not to. I mean, obviously, if there's a really low level in some of the fruit coming in, you
mm-hmm.
might do that, but preference is to not do that.
To not do that. So what are the... Do you have like a flagship cider that you try to make every year?
I make a couple of ciders that are Yeah, I guess I'd call them flagship ciders. And
yeah.
they tend to be ciders that were probably, well, they were certainly designed back at the time when nobody knew what cider was. They're not super sweet, but they're not super dry either. So they're what I would call session ciders.
Session ciders. And so what would be the ABV on that?
6.5.
6.5, yeah. So that's a lot lower than a lot of ciders coming out. Are you adding any water to your juice?
Oh, no.
No water. Okay.
Never.
Okay. I just want to be clear. I'm not being disrespectful.
No, I just want to be straight up.
Yeah.
It's just the juice.
Yeah, just the juice. So 6%, that is very sessionable. No sugar, primarily. You probably wouldn't have to at 6%. And fermenting dry.
Yes.
Still and carbonated. Here's a kitty cat.
Well, most of that was lightly carbonated, force carbonated.
All right.
Back sweetened often with sweet reserve.
Mm-hmm. Sweet reserve.
Juice,
okay. And are that getting back to that flagship, what would you call that flagship cider then?
I called it original.
Original, yeah. So I saw that on your website.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's not a very creative name, but as soon as I came out with that, then I gradually started to see everybody coming out with an original.
Well,
I guess they were equally uncreative.
Well, that's one way to look at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, your first cider is a bit of a shorter name than my first cider that I really hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
So you have the original. What else do you have?
Well, I have one that's called Liberty Spy that has probably been my best seller. It's a little bit sweeter. It's a blend of Northern Spy and Liberty. And it's particularly, I think, in the early days, it was kind of cider that even if people came in and said they liked dry, they really didn't.
They didn't really know,
and they just thought that they should say dry. So it would have, the way I described it is, this is the cider I'm going to bring to your house for dinner if you've never had any of my cider before, because it's probably going to appeal to the greatest number of people.
Right.
It started out sweet and it finished dry.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of satisfied most people.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a funny thing, that sweetness scale. So are you using what we're seeing in New York now, the scale on the bottles? No.
No.
So how do you explain cider to folks? Folks come in here, imagine you have a good traffic coming by here, I would expect, and they pull in, and that kind of classic question, what cider? Do you have a, imagine since, you know, being commercial since 96, probably have a little bit of a rap that you give people.
Yeah, although, honestly, I don't have to much anymore.
Anymore? I mean,
the first 10 years or so, yes, definitely. But now it's changed quite a bit, and people are coming in specifically looking for cider.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're a little confused when I tell them I also make grape wines, but...
Do you ever, like... go into directions there where you're putting some of your cider on grape skins, doing...
No.
I always used to call it a second wine, and now, you know, I know I have, like, some fancy names to it, but, you know.
Right. No, I know what you're talking about. I haven't done any of that yet.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I will.
Yeah.
It's...
Would it be fair to say that you've kind of... You're in your stride, and you're just kind of keep on keeping on after...
I think that, you know, we've kind of ebbed and flowed, and for a while we focused more on our grape wines, and now I think we're swinging back to focusing more on the cider.
The market's there now, you know, for the first time.
Well, it's, to me, what's interesting is if you come in 5 years ago, people were still looking for things that were sweet. But now, the lion's share of the people that are walking through the front door are asking for dry ciders. And what's just as interesting is that the main demographic that I see leading that inquiry is the younger drinker. So it's backwards to what you would normally expect, where the younger drinker is only looking for sweet and then will, over time, progress. But, I mean...
Wow.
And it's a pretty consistent trend.
That's fantastic.
Well, I think so, because for a long time, I couldn't sell my dry ciders. You know, my wife ended up drinking most of it, which made her happy, but didn't do much for the cash register.
Yeah. Just looking forward, I mean, been in this for a while. You're almost 96. See here, you're getting up to your, like, 25th year of doing this.
Yeah.
What's the future looking like?
I have a friend in the area who is from Normandy. Mm. And I always would say to him, look, I know that there are a lot of stills kicking around in France. Could you help me find one? And he kept saying, no, I don't know of any. And then he finally called me up and he said, you know, the little village that I grew up in has a big manor house, and the guy who lives there now found one up in one of the attics. And I said, well, I want it. So it cost me more to ship it than to buy it, but I've got it.
I love it.
It's not licensed yet, so I'm not set up to use it, but that's another direction I'd like to go in.
I'm really happy to hear that, being a big fan of Calvados, and I've spent a lot of time, I lead tours to Normandy, cider tours now, and so I have a big affection for the Normans. And I've seen a lot of their stills are on wheels, which I love.
Exactly,
You know, they bring it around to different farms, and they would distill it, you know, and be a mobile distilling setup, which I feel like in the U.S., we've really kind of been shot ourselves in our own foot, not allowing hobbyists to distill, because it's a craft that you can then pass on generationally. I mean, some makers in France bought their estate by those barrels that their grandfather made, you know, and then so you're coming into it and you got to now really discover a pretty, you know, make a good distilled spirit is not just something you read out of a book.
Right.
You got it. You just like cider making.
Yeah, you're going to have to work at it.
So that could really change your whole business scene here in that way.
It could. And I, you know, again, I'm getting up in age, so I have to wonder whether I'll be able to get enough under my belt to where I feel happy with the kind of products I'd be putting out, but it's going to be fun to try at least.
Oh, yeah. It could be really
fun. It's a very small still, but it's a beautiful old copper, you know, an alambic still.
Can we get a look at that?
Yeah, it's maybe 150 years old
Wow, that's exciting. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
You just bought something really, a real treasure. Well, how about if we take a walkabout and look at some of the stuff you're talking about? I'm pretty excited to see that.
Yeah, let's do that.
We left the outside porch and walked through the tasting room and into the back door that led us into the production area. Now imagine, this is a pretty big building. It is that kind of classic utilitarian building with metal siding and a peaked roof. And the ceilings must be, I would say like 40 to 50 feet high. And what's really interesting is some of the equipment that started revealing itself as we're walking around. Mind you, Bill has been at this for 23 years. And as such, he was kind of on the forefront of some innovative equipment at the time. And there are going to be photos on the show notes to some of the equipment that he was willing to show me and also talk about its history. Quite fascinating. Let's go. So we just walked back here with Bill in the Bellwether production area. That's a lot of stainless right there. I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, and then we've got our bottling room. We've got a couple more tanks in here.
Oh yeah, you got a big bottling setup here. All right, so you know when I was asking, are you hand bottling it? And sometimes a counter pressure thing can mean a lot of different things, but this is actually a little conveyor belt kind of setup.
Yeah, this is a more serious.
Yeah. You could put a lot of bottles through here. What is the number of bottles per minute or whatever that they
do? You can probably do realistically about 45 cases an hour, mm-hmm. 12 bottle, mm-hmm. 750 milliliter.
How long have you had this bottling set up here?
Well, I brought this from the other building, so I had this pretty much right off the bat.
Did you get this used from a wine?
No, I bought it from a mom and pop fabricator out in California. Well, it's funny. This, if you go over and look at the nameplate on it, this is serial number 1. And the prototype actually was owned by Anheuser-Busch. So this was equipment that really was...
That's a pretty special piece of history you have there.
At the beginning. Yeah, it's funny. In the beginning, I even had... I'm trying to think who was... Maybe it was Labatt's or something like that from Canada came down to look at it. This line... was really designed for small breweries.
I gotta walk over and look at it. So it's International Machine Industries Inc., California Atwater. Where's the serial number? Right there. Jeez, I'm crow. Model Millennium.
Yeah.
Wow. That is super cool. That is really super cool. That's like a piece of amazing bottle history. And this is just like, kind of like kooky looking at it because it's all these, different, lines going in. It's like something out of Little Shop of Horrors,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Well, it was kind of fun in the beginning when something would go wrong. We actually would take a video of it and upload it to YouTube and then just call the guy up and tell him to take a look at it and see what he thought was going wrong.
And he would be able to tell you?
Usually.
Yeah, of course he did. Yeah. Wow. And then over here...
This is something called a twist rinser.
A twist rinser.
And it was set up...
Looks like DNA. It's like...
Yeah, it
you
does.
Know, a swirl of stuff. It's crazy.
There's another piece of it down there and then a what they call a dump table over there. So if it was all set up and it was designed for 12-ounce beer bottles, the bottles would be dumped on the table and then they would be pushed by a motor into this helix-looking setup of white tubes. And the bottles they're right side up and they would be corkscrewed upside down. And then there's a spray bar in the middle. They'd be sprayed out, and they travel upside down and drain and then get corkscrewed right side up, and there would be a little bridge that would go over to that other conveyor.
And how did it work?
It worked great.
And not using it anymore because?
Now it's a big sink.
And why did you stop using it? Just because?
Well, because we stopped using 12-ounce bottles.
But this could be used again.
Oh, it could be. It's one of these things that I don't think they would build too many of these anymore. There's other designs that are cheaper and easier to use and don't take up as much room.
Right.
I mean, this is a lot of real estate.
It is. And that's serial number 5.
Yeah.
It looks like they had the goal to like make quite a few of them. Because I'm seeing 4 zeros before that 5.
Yeah, I think that was wishful thinking.
No doubt. Wow. I just love that kind of ingenuity. Like somebody thought of doing that and created this. I'm going to step back here and get a little bit of a better photo there, if I could, of the whole setup. Because that's some pretty cool bottling history there. not unusual as a consumer for me just to kind of not think much about packaging. I mean, I go into a store and I either want a big bottle or small bottle or a can to go. But when you're a producer, packaging is like one of the biggest things of your entire business. How are you going to get your product to the consumer? So when I walked up to that plate and I saw serial number 40s and then number 1, I knew that I was looking at a bit of the history of the beverage industry's bottling production. And as he said, Anheuser-Busch had the prototype. My goodness, it was really something. If you want to see a photo of that, do go to the show notes of this here episode 199 to take a look. And he gave me a little bit more of a background story that I didn't add in here, and that is that the gentleman who actually designed these two bottling lines, the one for the 750 mil and then what he called the twist rinser, which does look like a helix or a DNA. He passed away, but his son is still alive. And while he was alive, what Bill would do is if he had a problem, he would videotape it and then upload it to YouTube. And then the guy who lived in California would take a look at it and be able to tell him how to fix it, which I thought was super cool. And these two pieces of production equipment do take up a lot of space, especially the twist rinser. But how cool that he has this incredible history. It's kind of like having the original printer press for newspapers. Now we just take that for granted. I don't know if I'm a super geek or not. No, okay, yes, I am. Yes, I am. You know that. But I just find that so fascinating on how it changes. And it actually, there is a bit of a thread in the story with Bill around bottling that you're going to hear next, because it is so important on how we get that package to the consumer. And one other thing to know about Bill is when he first started Bellwether, he was packaging his product in 12-ounce glass bottles. That's how he used the twist rinser. But now only does 750ml bottles, which is a little counter to what I've been seeing across the board, because everybody's going into smaller packaging. And I think that is kind of a nice historical history lesson for all of us, in that the market changes and consumers change too on what they want. And I've been a big loudspeaker for saying, hey, makers, give us smaller formats, because, well, there's a lot of single people, for one, who like small format bottles. There's a lot of cider tourists who like smaller format bottles. And sometimes it's a little bit easier to get shelf space. But in this region of the Finger Lakes, by and large, we're seeing large format bottles. I just find that so, so interesting. So you got to take a look at these photos. Take a look at the twist rinser. It's really kooky looking, and just taking it all in is just absolutely amazing. Next up, you're going to hear what I kind of nudge him to do next. Let's go there. How about that still?
Oh, we'll have to go out.
Okay, let's go outside. Go check that out. I'm going to go right in here. Yep. Oh, my gosh. All right, so what we're looking at is, how would you describe that, Bill? Well, with the shape is like kind of like a button mushroom in a way.
Yeah, that's a pretty good description. It's not really a sphere. It's more like an egg.
Kind of looks a little Mediterranean too,
it does, like from
Turkey or something.
With all the
little bumps on it all the way around. Yeah. Yeah, so not that big.
No, this is a very small still. So, I mean, we're obviously not going to do huge productions in this.
Yeah.
But it's...
Is this upside down right now?
No, it's
right side up.
Yeah,
and so that's coming out from the bottom. That's where it'd be dripping out. And then
you'd have a cap and then that coil.
The coil sticking out. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a nice size.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if it's too big, then you're going to need the space for it, and also have to deal with getting a lot of product in there to be testing with. So sometimes smaller is better.
Well, I think for what I'm doing initially, this will be more than enough. And
oh, that's beautiful.
If it works out, then you know, wow, we can add to it. But
That's a beautiful piece of equipment. I mean, just the roundness too. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
You know, someone is really craftsman.
The guy that I mentioned that helped me locate this has access to some very old photographs of this.
A particular still?
From that village, and they're really cool photographs. He's got a similar one in his business. He makes port.
Mm.
And has, his family has for, mm-hmm, you know, generations.
Well, I wish you many years of fun with this still, because, you know, it just changed like the whole setup. It's just really fun what you're able to do with it. And yeah, it's a fun kind of learning piece.
Well, and I mean, at very least, I think initially we'll certainly do things like pomos with it.
Mm-hmm.
We have one pomo right now that we had somebody locally distill product for us. And that's just that's almost a no-brainer for,
mm-hmm,
for something like, mm-hmm, this. And then the goal would be to try to move into Calvados type products.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Why not? Just tuck those barrels away and let them, you know, I mean, you do know that kind of that French scene. So you're able to like sell like a young, you know, brandy, an older one, and
yeah,
cocktails, and it just opens up a whole market. So it's a really kind of clever business step for you to do in that way.
Well, and it's also something we can take the grapes and do things with them too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So there's parallels in both venues.
No doubt, that's really a handsome looking still.
Yeah, it'll be fun to get that set up.
A lot of times they're kind of like almost like not like a genie lamp, but they're a little bit more pulled up. But this one, I've never seen one like that.
Well, but and again, if it had its cap on,
it would
look a little bit more like
familiar. But yeah, but still, that is pretty unique. And I'm going to get a little photo of it so I can show listeners what that looks like.
Yeah,
and that's some heavy duty copper too. You know, like they don't make that kind of copper like that anymore. It feels like it's a quarter of an inch thick.
Well, and these now, my understanding is if these stills in France will be pierced, because there was some sunset on who could have these, and so now basically unless you really have this relicensed and everything, they would have to come in and pierce them.
Ugh.
And they would come in and put a million pinholes in them so that they were
those
unusable.
Kind of people, I curse them who pierce the stills.
Well, it just seems like an unusually cruel.
It is unusually cruel thing. I haven't heard that.
Yeah.
Because I've been, you know, I don't know why I never asked this when I was over there, but I thought that everybody could just distill, or do you need a license to distill too at home?
I think that that's gone. It used to be that way, where there was basically, you know, anybody who wanted to do it could do it.
Yeah,
I think that is no longer.
Obviously, I have a very deep affection for stills, and the thought of them being pierced is not a good idea. So what better way to deal with my gasp and fright at that thought than to go taste some cider? So we go there next and hear a little bit more about bottling history with Bill Barton of Bellwether Hard Cider and Wine Cellars in the Finger Lakes region of Tompkins County, New York.
So, first up is a cider called Lord Scudamore.
Yes, Lord Scudamore, you did a little bit of a tip of the glass to the Lord himself from England.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, this is, I saw this a little, it's a Brut.
It is Brut.
Mm, cheers, cheers.
This is a little Northern Spy apple. And it's been 5 years in the bottle.
Yeah, man, wow, that's like... But that finish is something that you don't find very often because most people aren't letting it sit in the bottle for that long. And that's really pronounced. So you're having that kind of drop there that is, kind of say the yeast or something's kind of brought it in that way. But how would you describe it? What is that?
Well, to me, it's a real nutty.
Yeah, it's nutty. That's it. I wasn't doughy or something. Like, how do I say that? Yeah. But kind of like, not almond, but
what is all that? Like walnut or like a bitter nut.
You.
To me, it's really fun when somebody comes in and they have the interest and the time to start to talk to them about Lord Scudamore.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Lord Scudamore because,
And I'm sure somebody who knows the history better than I do will probably correct this. But my understanding was that, you know, he worked with the Somerset Red Streak apple. And we're talking about the early 1600s.
Long time ago.
And at the time, the glass commonly used was this weak Venetian glass that wouldn't hold carbonation. So people clearly knew about secondary fermentation, but if they did it, they were building bombs, basically.
Because they would explode under pressure.
They would blow the bottles up. And at the same time, the British were out conquering the world, and they outlawed the use of wood to fire the glassworks because they needed that wood for the fleet. And the British turned to what they have lots of, which is coal. The coal gave them higher temperatures. They accidentally invented strong glass. And he was standing there. And I always tell people...
He was standing there. I like how you say that. Okay, good.
Well, I mean, he was there.
He was there. And got the kudos for it.
And he got to use it. The thing that I always point out is he beat Dom Perignon by 75 years, essentially to inventing the method. But he did it with cider, so he's a very small footnote in history.
Yes.
And what I find just as interesting in talking with people is it took 75 years for that knowledge to jump just across the English Channel. And if you think about it today...
Oh, would have been
it
seconds.
It would have been seconds.
Yeah.
And,
on a smartphone, yeah.
Yeah. But it's just, to me, that's an interesting...
So the thing there is... Champagne is not a UK. It's not really the. It's really kudos to the English and Lord Scudamore for having the potential to have champagne because you need to have a real dense bottle to hold the bubbles, and yet the trademark is with the French, but the Brits do like and are more and more, because I just had the same conversation with the museum director at the Herefordshire Cider Museum about Lord Scudamore and his contribution to champagne, but it was taken by the French.
Yeah.
Because trademark is trademark.
Yeah.
And laws are laws.
There is a very good chance that if you go to the Trumansburg Tasting Room of Bellwether, you will meet Bill Barton and be able to have a taste of some of the ciders that we talked about in this here chat this week. I really encourage you to do so. He's a treasure. People who have been in the cider industry in the U.S. for that long have a particular bird's eye view of the industry and have also been finally like involved at a level that is rather unique. So check it out. Make a stop there. And there's just so many cideries there, including the following cideries that all helped sponsor this trip to the Finger Lakes for Cider Chat. And that would be Bellwether Hard Cider and Wine Cellars, Black Diamond Cider, also in Trumansburg, South Hill Cider in South Hill, the Finger Lakes Cider House, so right down the road from Bellwether. They have their brand Kite and String Cider. and Redbird Cider 2. That's Eric Schett, an amazing gent, and I look forward to letting you hear all those episodes like this one today from the Finger Lakes region of New York. A big tip of the glass to them, and visit Ithaca for making this episode possible for you. And here's one more thing that might really encourage you to stop at Bellwether is soon he will be releasing a bottle of what will have a blend of apple brandy that has been aged for 10 years with fresh pressed apple juice. And in France, that is called a pommeau. And I want to say I tasted it. He gave me a taste and I nearly fell over my chair. It was fan-freaking-tastic. Really knocked my socks off. And he's just kind of trying to figure out the label because I've been having this conversation with so many people about pommeau. I know I've talked about this. I got to get to it, but I have my own job to do. I can't keep up with American makers who don't know label stuff. But, you know, you shouldn't be using pommeau. It is a controlled name that is like champagne owned by the French. For better or for worse, it just is. And so he's trying to figure out the labeling for that. And meanwhile, the TTB, which is a Tobacco and Trade Bureau in the U.S., is giving out that label without knowing that they are kind of setting up American makers to have some branding problems once the French come in full steam ahead and say, you shouldn't be using that label, despite the fact that you've been using it on your bottle for years, and who knows what kind of repercussions will come from that. I don't want to make you screech your brakes right now if you're driving, but something to think about if you're a commercial maker. Pommeau is a controlled name. Anyways, despite all that, Bill has a bottle of the made the same way as Pommeau, and I don't know, shall you call it pommette? Pommeau? Something like that. Play with it. Change it up, Bill. Can't wait to see you again. Kick back some of your fine product and maybe drink some apple brandy. As I am rolling towards the 200th episode of Cider Chat, I have a deep gratitude for the folks who have supported this podcast through your kind words, your time that you take to just say, hey, Rhea, you know, I hear you. You know, I'm basically sitting in a room here talking, looking at post-it notes on my monitor, talking to no one, but imagining you with the glass and hopefully a smile on your face too. And if it wasn't for the talking palms who are not in the cider house right now, it'd be a really lonely experience. But I have you and you have me. And that keeps us connected around the world big time, because it is kind of a lonely place when it's such a big world. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. I need to now get ready for the second annual New England Cider Tour that's rolling out in, oh my gosh, like 2 days. I cannot wait to see all the folks on the bus. We're going to have a crazy, amazing time. And then Friday comes along, and I'm going to be hanging out with Ambrosia Borowski of the Northmen in Chicago. She's coming to Franklin County Cider Days, and we have some Calvados and apple brandy we're going to be tasting. Yowza. And then it's just one event after another. My head and my heart is full, and I got a lot to do, so it's time for me to go. If you want to follow along on what's happening here in my spot of Ciderville, check it out on Instagram at Cider Chat Ciderville, maybe the Cider Chat Facebook page, or even on Twitter at Cider Chat. It's all good. In the meanwhile, this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Like cider, we like palms, we love orchard, and heaven's on the reason.
is a reason why we do it like this. Yes, there is
a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is a reason why we do it like this. Yes, there is a reason why we do it like this. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the street, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like farms, we like orchards, and in some farms, there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking out of the orchard, dancing in the street, smelling all the blossoms, kicking out our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like
farms. Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards. Having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. There is a reason why we do it like this. Dancing in the street, staring at the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider. We like farms.
Yes, we do.
We like orchards. Having some fun.